Down goes Brown, also known as Sean McIndoe, joining us on the line right now. Hey, Sean, thanks so much for this. Yeah, the Atlantic's a mess right now. Like, these teams aren't horrible. I get it. But, can you separate? Is there a big separation in your mind between Montreal and Tampa Bay? That's 10 points. All those teams, they feel like they're very similar.
Yeah, exactly. There's not a lot to choose from if you were starting today with these teams. Now, obviously, some of them have banked more points than others in the first half, and you know, Montreal and Tampa Bay being an example of that. And you know, that's clearly going to pay off. You know, Montreal seems still fairly safe as far as making the playoffs, period. But yeah, you're right. I mean, you go down the list, and you can get pretty far before you get to something that you can definitively say is a bad team. And you know, I'm kind of with you on Detroit. I don't really trust them all that much.
Mm-hmm.
Buffalo, maybe you're close, although you know, they had those injuries the first mm-hmm. month or two, and you never know what you know, a young team like that, when the light's going to turn on. And the rest of the way, I mean, it's pretty much a free for all, because all of these teams could still make the playoffs, and you know, who knows who's going to do what once you get there, because the division, you know, if you're a pessimist, you look at this division and say it's not very good. If you're an optimist, you say this thing's wide open, and any one of these teams could win a round.
Yeah, they could. And what could also happen is the Montreal Canadiens could host a first round playoff series against the Rangers team that has more points than them.
And far more points, and could be in a situation where you've got an Atlantic division where you don't want to finish first, and you've got a Metro division where you don't want to finish third. In terms of, you know, if mm-hmm. you're already in fourth place, you don't want to move up, and that's just not a great situation at all. And you know, you look at all the other things. You, right now, you'd have the second and third best team in the Eastern Conference play each other in the first round. That'd be the Metro. You'd have the sixth and seventh best team face each other. That'd be the Atlantic. You know, again, if you're a team like the Leafs or the Senators or, you know, maybe even Montreal, if they drop, that can be a good thing. You mm-hmm. get a very winnable matchup in that first round. But yeah, we could be looking at that scenario that we've known has been possible for a few years now, but has never happened, where you could have a Metro Division team raising an Atlantic Division champion banner next year because they've crossed over and then won a couple of rounds and emerged, technically speaking, as the Atlantic champion.
They don't do that. They're not actually going to hand an Atlantic Division banner to that team, are they?
I hope they do. I mean, some teams don't do that. Some teams don't raise the banners. But yeah, I'd love to see a team like the Rangers just do that, just to give a little you know, a little nudge to the NHL that maybe it's time to start rethinking this.
It feels like it's just we're one scenario like that taking place. If that in fact happens here in the middle of April, and we've got a Montreal and a Rangers first round series with Montreal hosting Game 7, and the Rangers like 10 points up on the Canadiens, I feel like that's a fix that happens immediately in the offseason, because it happened in the NBA, right, Sean? They got rid of the divisions. Divisions still exist, but they mean nothing now. They just rank you 1 through 8 in each conference. It feels like as soon as that happens the first time, the next year, it's going to be thrown into total chaos.
Yeah, and then, like, I wrote about this on Friday, and I get what the NHL is trying to do here. They are trying to bring back the rivalries. You know, the hockey is a great sport for rivalries. When you got a little bit of bad blood, and you got a couple of teams that don't like each other, and the best way to do that is to get those repeated playoff matchups. And obviously, the old school rivalries are something that's disappearing from the modern day NHL product. And you know, I'm sure somewhere along the line, somebody said, "Hey, if we can go to a division format, get the same teams playing each other year in and year out, maybe that can rekindle some of that." And you kind of knew that something like what we're seeing this year in the East was the worst case scenario, and maybe you just crossed your fingers that you wouldn't run into it. But here we are. And yeah, you're right. Especially if it ends up involving high profile teams like Montreal and New York, I would not at all be surprised if this is one of those situations where the NHL makes a change fairly quickly to make sure they don't go down that road again.
What's going on in the Atlantic Division taking any of the shine off this Leaf season for you, Sean? Because I know the Leafs are in a great spot considering where they expected to be, where they were expected to be, where fans thought they'd be in 2016, 2017, and just watching these young players play, everybody's excited, and rightfully so. But here they are in the middle of this Atlantic Division, and points-wise, there's not much separation between them and really anybody, like the bottom of the Eastern Conference. Yeah, they're not 30th, they're in the middle of the pack, and they're in a playoff spot right now. But it's hard to, I know everything's going well, but from a points perspective, it's not like they're just massively they're massively different than even the Red Wings, who I think we all agree are not good.
Yeah, no, exactly. And you know, certainly it's kind of one of those glass half full things. You look at the Leafs season, and I think they're well ahead of where most of us thought they would be, and have, you know, potential. Even if they really did flip the switch down the line, they could still even win this division, which is something that none of us thought we'd be having that conversation this late in the season. The other side of that, you want to go glass half empty. It's still a team that's lost more games than they've won. I mean, we're talking, you know, if we didn't have the loser point to prop everyone up, we'd be talking about a team that was under 500 here. But you know, I look at it this way: this is not the year that the Maple Leafs have to win. It'd be nice if they did. It'd be nice if they made the playoffs. Nice if they could even maybe win around, go on a bit of a run. But this isn't the year that has to happen. This is a team that, you know, it's built for the future, and the future is going to come soon. This team can be a contender as early as next year, certainly 2 years from now.
Oh, yeah.
You got to expect that they're going to be hitting their stride then. And I look around this division and I say, okay, forget about this being a weak division right now. Who's really on the upswing? Who's going to be much better, you know, a year or two down the road? And, you know, I think Buffalo falls into that category, but I'm not sure too many of these other teams do. We know Tampa's got the cap crunch coming. Florida, you know, we're not really quite sure what to make of them. Montreal's issues aren't necessarily going away. Ottawa seems to be having one of those seasons where everything's going right, and, you know, I don't know if that's going to repeat itself. So, you know, you start to feel like if you're a Leafs fan, and I know, believe me, I know optimism isn't something that's a big part of our DNA, but you try to look ahead and think what the future holds, and it's at least possible that you know, there could be a little bit of a parting of the waves here, and we could see an opportunity for this team to be contending, you know, legitimately contending for a division title next year or beyond that, not just because a bunch of teams in front of them have all had the wheels fall off, but because they actually are one of the better teams in the division.
Plus, you don't hear any fresh insanity like you hear out of Vancouver from Jim Benning, who says, oh, we've got to evaluate these games, headed up to the deadline. Maybe we're buyers, maybe we're sellers. Like, you should be in a pretty good spot as far as evaluating your team here now through almost 60 games of the season. And people in Vancouver should know, I mean, who's dissenting on this opinion, the Canucks aren't very good. They're not good. That's not a team that should be adding pieces. And I know I can't imagine this is not the case, that the Leafs front office understands that, yes, this is a good Leafs team, and they're ahead of where they maybe expected to be at this point. But yeah, this is not the year to start making moves to add short-term for long-term. That the trade deadline, you know, it does not hinge on these next five games, Sean. Like, that's crazy talk. That should have nothing to do with it.
No, absolutely. Any decent GM and decent front office has made their evaluation by now, you would think. And yeah, you're right. I mean, the Leafs are a team that you know, I've been beating the drum for a long time. I think GMs in this league are too timid. I don't think they make enough moves. I don't think they're aggressive enough, especially in a league with as much parity as we're always told the NHL has. To my mind, if all the teams are this close, then that should be even more of an impetus for GMs to go out there and try to improve. But there are teams that it just doesn't make sense to get aggressive, and it's not the time. And I think the Leafs are in that category, and I wouldn't be surprised if they were very quiet at the deadline. They've sort of suggested that in a few different ways that could be the case. I could also see it being a situation where they touch base with some teams on some rentals, and maybe they make some calls back the afternoon of the deadline when we're ticking down an hour or two, and just see if anybody's still out there and if any prices are dropping. And if you can scoop a bargain and you can get somebody who helps you get in the playoffs this year and it's on the cheap, hey, that's great. Let's get some playoff experience for these young guys and see what they can do. But you're right. This is not a case where you're trading top prospects or high draft picks. That time will come, and like I say, it might come a lot quicker than any of us thought. It's not this year, though.
Talking to Sean McIndoe, also known as Down Goes Brown, writer for Sportsnet Vice, the hockey news. So Mitch Marner now missing two full games. He missed most of that game against the Blue Jackets, and it's resulted in a couple of line adjustments. The most notable would be William Nylander playing alongside Austin Matthews, and boy, does Nylander look rejuvenated. It feels like that's going to be a tough one to separate when Marner gets back in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it'll be interesting to see, because Austin Matthews, I mean, certainly we've all ranted and raved about him all season long, and but maybe the most amazing thing is how productive he's been able to be with the line mates that he's had. And that's, you know, that's no knock on the Zach Hymans of the world. But, you know, this is not a guy, you know, this isn't a guy like Patrick Laine in Winnipeg who's playing on the first line with the best players on the team. This is a guy who's sort of being sent out there and being told, you know, do it on your own, and we're going to put talent around the rest of the lineup so that we can run three lines every night. And I'm sure certainly if you're William Nylander, you don't need any motivation to really show what you can do when you've got this opportunity, because that would certainly be a situation where you know, I'm sure any winger on this team is dying to get a shot at playing with Austin Matthews, and if that chemistry really develops and really clicks, you know, I know I'm one of those fans, like a lot of people out there. I was thinking all along that, you know, give me Matthews and Marner, put these two together and let's see what they can do, and we've seen a bit of that. But that by the same token, if you end up separating them, you've suddenly got two lines that have a real good dangerous young player on them, and that's tough to contend with in today's NHL. And you know, having that not just depth, but being able to spread that scoring out, that would be nice. And you know, if William Nylander can be a piece of that on one of those lines, then that frees you up to keep those two top young prospects split, and really makes your team look dangerous.
So the Montreal Canadiens are bad now. They've lost three in a row. They look like a team in total chaos. At least Carey Price looked better his last game, but yeah, now they can't score, and you know, Price was part of the reason for their swoon before the bye week. They're just 2 points up on the Senators for first in the Atlantic, and the Sens have two games in hand. I think a lot of people were concerned that this Shea Weber PK Subban deal would look bad for the Montreal Canadiens, but maybe not as soon as it already appears to. And not that Shea Weber's a bad player, but PK Subban's younger, and he's heating up right now, and the guy he got into it with, Michel Therrien, is no longer there. So things look bad, in a word, for the Montreal Canadiens, Sean.
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, you look at that PK Subban, Shea Weber deal, and that, you know, we will never know exactly what went on behind the scenes and what may have driven that, but there was certainly some suspicion out there that this may have been a case of an organization that was choosing the coach over the star player, and that rarely works out well. And, you know, when you're half a season removed from that, you've already made the coaching change, and you got to wonder if there's going to be some regret there. But you know, at the end of the day, this is a team that banked a lot of points early in the season. This is a team that, if Carey Price gets back to what he can be, this is a guy who can be the best goalie in the league. And in today's NHL, if you've got that, you're going to be okay, really, regardless of what else is going on. So, you know, at this point, you know, I still think they're the best team in the division. I still think they're likely to grab that top seed in the Atlantic. Whether they go any further than that, though, I'm not sure. And whether they're the Stanley Cup contender that we thought, or, you know, depending on your perspective, feared that maybe they were earlier in the season. They haven't been giving off that vibe in a long time now, and the question was always whether Claude Julien would come in and sort of instantly turn it around the way we've seen other coaching changes. Maybe he still does. They didn't look great Saturday, but they're coming off a bye week, and nobody's really looked good coming off the bye, so give him a little bit of extra time and see how it looks. But yeah, realistically, if you're a Montreal fan, you can't like what you've seen at all from this team recently, or even going back the last couple of months.
Yeah, teams coming off a bye week now, 3-11-2. It has not gone well for them. And I think one of those wins, or maybe even two, is two teams coming off the bye week at the same time. So basically, you have no shot at winning that first game coming off the bye week. It's the first year of this thing. It's really bizarre, and it's weird to see, like, a couple of days during a week where there's only two games in a day. I don't know. You've heard you know, diverging opinions, even within some writing itself, like the stuff you did for Vice on Friday, Sean, where you went back and forth with yourself on whether this bye week thing is good for the league.
It's been this confusing thing because, you know, I like the concept, and, you know, this was something the players asked for and negotiated for, and, you know, I'll trust the players to know what's best for them. But, we've had this weird situation all year, partly because of the bye, where it seems like every time you look at a playoff race, you go, wow, these two teams are neck and neck, and then you go, oh, wait a second, one of them's played five more games than the other one, and suddenly you got to break out your calculator, and it's all points percentage and projected points and all this stuff. But, I mean, the thing that really struck me was, with the bye weeks is, you know, we had week after week where it was one or two teams at a time, and then last week suddenly you got eight teams off in the same week. That seemed really strange to me, and, you know, I don't, maybe that's the way to do it. Maybe in the future you just, every division gets its bye at the same time, and then they play each other on the way back, and you like kind of ease them back into it. But it's been, you know, an interesting idea, and, you know, again, I don't want to take anything away from the players if this is what they're asking for. I like having vacations in the middle of the season
too,
so I can't blame them, but the way it was implemented by the NHL, you know, stop me if you've heard this one before, but good idea, kind of a strange implementation by the league.